This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson. Podcasting from beautiful Bend, Oregon, the Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that provides you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. The Warrior Mind Podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes and links can be found at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. Please come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. If you're returning, thank you for your continued support. This is episode 332, and today I have a special interview with Doug Strikarjic from AQR. Doug has been instrumental in assisting me in assessing and learning more and more about mental toughness. I call it mental strength, but this is a great, great interview, and I hope you enjoy it. So let's move right into it.
Doug, welcome back again. Thank you so much for taking time out. We haven't touched base in a while. We had a great conversation a couple of months ago about mental toughness. Also have some new listeners here. So welcome again. Thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Graham, and with your listeners. So I'm looking forward to this.
Great. So for the new listeners that are there, could you give a little bit of background about yourself, AQR, and perhaps you could move the mic just a little bit from your mouth. I'm picking up on your breathing.
Right. Okay. Is that any better?
That sounds wonderful. So could you give a little background on yourself, AQR, and how you got involved with mental toughness?
Well, my background is largely in human resource management and operations management. I worked at one time for a really progressive organization, Castrol. You probably know it through the GTX brand. It's a lubricants business. And in many ways, it was very, very impressive. They have probably the single biggest market share of any lubricants company in the world. Within my time at Castrol, they gave me a couple of really challenging and interesting projects. And one of the projects was a project where three or four other people had a go at it and failed. When I took it on, I built a little team around me and we succeeded. And afterwards, I began to reflect about, well, what was it that made us succeed? Because it really was a difficult project. And we began to understand things like the importance of tenacity, sticking at it. There will always be problems that you come across. That became one of the things that intrigued me. Another thing was commitment, getting a group of people who really wanted to do it. And then there were other elements like confidence and having a sense of can-do, which was actually really difficult because of the previous failures, there was a sense of we couldn't do it. So all of those elements sort of became important in the project. When I finished, I then set up my own business. I took what I learned away with me. And very, very early on in my private career, I recruited a young psychologist called Peter Clough, who is now Professor Peter Clough, and was recognized as the leading authority on mental toughness worldwide. Well, that, in a sense, that was my stroke of luck because I started working with Peter 25 years ago. He eventually left to go into academia because he really wanted to dig deep into what this was about. I started working with him. And then it was just one of those thrilling journeys. Around 1999, this is how long we've been working at it, Peter suddenly rang me one day and said, "We think we've cracked it." And he began to describe this model, which now emerges as the four C's. And between us, we refined it, we turned it into something that anybody could use, because up to now it was an academic concept. And the rest, I suppose, is history. We are where we are.
Wow, fantastic. So it sounds like between you and Dr. Clough, you've actually put together a formula, a definition of what mental toughness is, because it's a term that's been thrown around a lot and arbitrarily, I would say, you know, depending if you're in the military, mental toughness is one thing. If you're in sports, mental, and the person who is using that maybe doesn't have a good sense of what it conveys. And so could you give a brief definition of your working definition of what mental toughness is?
Now, that's a very good point, Greg, because there are a lot of terms spinning around in the same area. Things like mindset, optimism, character, resilience. And what we've discovered is they are all part of the same concept, and that concept is mental toughness. And we define it as a personality trait which explains to a large extent how people deal with stress, pressure, opportunity, and challenge, irrespective of circumstances. And there are a couple of key phrases in there. One is that it's a personality trait, which means it sits
I was just going to ask you about that, a personality trait. So I'll let you elaborate on that, but I found that interesting that it is part of a personality trait, and you were just about to elaborate it when I so rudely interrupted you, so please continue.
Okay, that's fine. It is significant that it's a personality trait because personality really describes our default response to whatever happens to us. So our personality sits in us all the time and matters. Every time we do something, it's our personality that determines our response. So that to discover that this is actually part of, you know, the core of our being is very fundamental. But there's a little bit more significance than that. When we talk about personality, quite commonly we talk about personality in terms of behavior and in terms of feelings. So we quite often talk about behaviors, competencies, how we act. And we're comfortable dealing with that because we can see behavior. And, you know, in the world of business, you have assessment and development centers where people actively go out and look at behaviors and then feed it back to individuals. The same applies to feelings and emotions. We can generally see emotions, and we can often understand our own emotions, and sometimes we understand other people's emotions through our own emotions. But there's a missing link. There is another element of personality, which is what we've hit upon, and that's how we think. And that's the difficult bit. It's the bit that sometimes people describe as attitude. Why does somebody behave in that way? Why does somebody respond emotionally in that way? And that's really what we've captured. We've been able to describe what that aspect of personality is, but more importantly, being able to create a framework that other people can use to be able to dig deep into the people they work with. And it's critically important in its own right, but if you are trying to change behavior and you are trying to change emotional responses, then you've got to understand why those happen, and that's where we've got to.
Wonderful. So there's a concept, you know, with a lot of my clients and just speaking in general, when we take a quote personality test, whether it's a Myers-Briggs or a DISC assessment or perhaps even the mental toughness assessment, many people presume that it's a pigeonhole effect, meaning, yep, this is who I am, this is who I'm going to be, this is who I always am, and forever and ever. And what I'm hearing, though, is that personality traits are malleable. They can be changed. They can change within a person. It's not a fixed concept. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think 20 years ago, it was commonly believed that your personality, once you got to a certain stage in your development, say by your mid-20s, was pretty much fixed. Well, we now know, especially through neuroscience, that we are capable of developing all the time. And there's nothing to stop somebody who's 75 beginning to reflect on their personality and develop their personality. It's just that by the time we get to, say, the age of 25 or 30, we tend to be comfortable with what we've become, and we tend not to think too much about it. And of course, that's got consequences. There's nothing, you know, there's no right or wrong in personality. It's just the way we are. And the way we are will have some upsides and we'll have some downsides. We tend to forget the downsides. That's the trouble.
Right. But I think this point is just before we go on to the four C's, I think this point is worth emphasizing again because of the different assessment types out there that people think that this is who they are as opposed to this is who they were up to this point in time. without understanding that if their personality or part of their personality is creating, I'm just going to use the word problems in their life, that they can change that part of their personality so that those problems don't arise. And I think it's a point to emphasize that through mental toughness, those things can be done. So I think it's really important for the listeners to understand what you said is that personality can change.
Oh, absolutely. Personality can change. And we know that you can develop mental toughness, and therefore you can develop the way you think, the way you respond inside your head to what happens, and that impacts on your behavior and emotions. You can change all of that. But you know, it's also important to say you don't need to change. Sometimes simply being self-aware is the important thing. You know, I might like being me, but I might not understand what the implications of being me are. So, you know, especially around the world of mental toughness, we quite often find ourselves spending a lot of time dealing with the people who haven't got a great deal of mental toughness. That's the mentally sensitive. And the benefits of developing mental toughness or being self-aware are often pretty evident. We tend to find that people who are mentally tough don't spend that much time looking at their mental toughness. But we also know that people who are mentally tough will often have downsides. These are the people who sometimes find that life is so easy for them. They have that kind of inner quality that allows them to achieve more easily than other people can achieve. But that sometimes has consequences. You can perhaps accidentally, without being aware of it, trample on other people. You might take on too much because you can think you can take the world on. These are all important things to be able to grasp as well. So one of the really interesting things about mental toughness is it's not just about dealing with the people who are mentally sensitive. There's learning for everyone.
Right. And I think that's a great point on some of the upsides and downsides being self-aware. So we've talked or alluded to the four C's of mental toughness. You've done some of that on LinkedIn. We did a podcast together about that. But for the new listeners, could you go through what those four C's are?
Right. Yes. So briefly, the four C's are control, commitment, challenge, and confidence. The first one, control, is essentially where a sense of self-worth sits. So it's where the sense of can-do sits. And we know it's got two sub-elements. One is, we call it life control, and that is, I believe I can do it. It's where that sense of can-do sits. And the other one is emotional control. And that's, I mean, this is literally hot off the press. We've been doing a lot of research in the last 2 or 3 years about this. We're beginning to understand that some people have got the ability to manage anxiety. What we know is we are all anxious about things, but some people aren't be able to manage it and don't show it. Other people don't have that quality, so they've got a low sense of life control. But interestingly, people with a high sense of life control have also got the ability to manage the emotions of people around them. So that's quite a powerful quality. Then the second element is commitment, and people will recognize this because it's where goal orientation sits. It's where I like working to goals and targets. If I'm going to do something, I want to know what I'm going to achieve, and immediately that paints a picture in my mind of what success looks like. But we also know lots of people who will do that and then do what it takes to achieve that goal. And so the second sub-element of commitment is, do you do what it takes to get there? And so this goal orientation and achievement orientation. So those first two elements, control and commitment, are interesting because those two are essentially what resilience is about. Resilience is a key quality. Resilience is the ability to recover from an adverse situation or something that's gone wrong. And the qualities that enable us to do that are, right, I think I can still do it, and I was going to achieve this, I'm still going to have a go at it. So those are the qualities that enable us to do that. But what we know about resilience is that you can be resilient if you want to be resilient, and you can be resilient if you have to be resilient. So one's more active than the other. And there's a researcher in America called Kabasa who was looking at commitment and resilience. And she just believed that the higher up in an organization you went, the more resilient you'd be. And that's what she found. But curiously, she stumbled across the third of the C's, this sense of challenge. What she found is that ambitious, aspirational people who had mental toughness also deliberately put their resilience into play. In other words, they would take risks, they would stretch themselves, they'd push themselves. And so they weren't comfortable about just sitting in their comfort zone. They were always stretching their comfort zone. So that's one element. But the other element is also really interesting. The other element of challenge is some people will stretch themselves, it'll go wrong, and their response will be, I'm never going to do that again. Other people will say, wow, that was an interesting experience. I learned something from that. I now know how to do it better. I'm going to have another go. And so the other sub-element of challenge is being open to learning from whatever happens to you. And so, you know, we think, and this is something that we've also been researching more and more. So this notion of being prepared to take risks and be prepared to learn from all your life's experiences, what we now understand is this is where openness to learning sits. It's, again, appears to be an extremely valuable quality for us at any stage of our lives. And then the thing that pulled it all together was understanding what confidence was about. Originally, we thought confidence was about simply being confident in our own abilities. But like all your listeners, we'll all know people who are very able, but who aren't confident about their abilities, so they never use it. We also know people who've got moderate amounts of ability who think they've got loads of it, and they go and try and use it all the time. And those are the people who tend to achieve a little bit more than the people who often have the real abilities. But that interplays with another aspect of confidence, which is the other subscale to confidence, and that's interpersonal confidence. Well, we were doing a big project in the UK with some very senior managers in a very big organization, and we were inviting them to sit around a table and discuss issues. And what we found is that some of them, even though they were the experts on the subject, would sit there and say nothing. And sometimes you'd have people who knew much less about a subject, sometimes who didn't know what they were talking about, would dominate a discussion and actually persuade a group to do something that most people in the group knew was wrong, but they still have that ability. And so that's this notion of interpersonal confidence. So confidence seems to be a combination of having confidence in your abilities and interpersonal confidence, which is what we would loosely describe as the ability to influence others as much as they're going to influence you. So I got to ask you
something here, Doug, if you don't mind. So there's this, when you were talking about that, when I was in my corporate world, I sat around similar situations that you described. And I'd like you to talk about the difference between this confidence, this interpersonal confidence, and arrogance. People can be arrogant and quote, bully people into submission to going their way, or they can do it with interpersonal confidence. How would you determine the difference in those two?
Well, actually, we touched upon it a little bit earlier when we talked about the potential downsides of being mentally tough. Mm-hmm. Well, arrogance is really a behavior. We can observe people being arrogant. What we need to understand is why do they behave in that arrogant way? Well, this is illustrating perfectly what a high degree of mental toughness might sometimes mean. So if somebody's got a really good, strong sense of interpersonal confidence, they'll never allow themselves to be dominated in a discussion. They may not listen to others. They may be so effective orally that they dominate discussions, and they may shut out other people. Now, if they're not self-aware of that, they just learn that they get their own way all the time and they like it. But for other people sitting around them, that will come over as bullying behavior, or it'll come over as arrogant. You know, that person only wants to listen to themselves. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, it's kind of wasting a really important talent. If somebody has got great influencing skills and got a great mindset, he's got that inner confidence that I'm prepared to go and stand my ground and say my bit. But if they don't realize that sometimes that has an impact on other people and switches other people off and maybe shuts them down, then some of their own effectiveness might actually be reduced. I mean, none of us do anything in most jobs without working with other people, without working with the team. And mm-hmm. if we switch the team off, we reduce our own effectiveness. So that's the link. And I think that illustrates nicely that, you know, the mentally tough often have as much to learn about their mental toughness as the mentally sensitive.
Good point. Excellent point. That's a valuable point, and that's where your AQR has this mental toughness assessment, which helps bring awareness to the individual. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Out of the four C's, if you were going to prioritize them, if somebody was going to say, what's the first of these C's that can cascade into the other ones that can have the biggest impact on my mental toughness, which one would it be? And could you add some discussion around that?
Well, technically, they're all independent elements. So we know that some people can have a high degree of confidence, others will have a low degree of confidence, but they might alternatively have high levels of control and low levels of control. So they all operate independently mm-hmm. from each other. We tend to talk about the situation being the determinant about which is the most important one, but there is one thing that does shine through in a lot of our work. It's actually difficult to develop mental toughness around the first of the four C's, that's control, challenge, and commitment, if you don't have confidence. So generally, when we're working on development activity, we check confidence first. And then I suppose the second bit is challenge. That's that openness to learning. Because if somebody isn't open to improving my sense of control or improving my sense of commitment, there's not much you can do about it. You've got to open that up. So we would say that those two elements are precursors to developing mental toughness generally.
Okay. And a question, you know, because one of the things that I look at is control, life control. Yeah. And what I have found is, you know, we teach people how to treat us. That is, many times we'll have boundaries and not adhere to them, or we don't know what our boundaries are, or at work we'll take, you know, somebody comes into the office, hey, can you do this for me? Yeah, sure, yeah. And you take on more of this. And so I was looking at the control part, the life control, directly, for me anyway, it seems like if we have good, healthy boundaries, we can get a good sense of life control. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Well, sure, but I'm not quite sure what you mean about boundaries.
So when we have boundaries that it's unacceptable to talk to me in this certain way, or if people come in to give you an assignment, let's say you're at work and people come into you all the time and all you do is say yes, 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 because you don't want to hurt their feelings. Really, the boundary would be is, no, I can't do it now. I'll get to it later. But that other person may get their noise out of their nose out of joint. So that's what, you know, when we have our personal boundaries, where do we say no to, and where do we say where we just want to be, I don't want to say a doormat, but we don't have these boundaries and people, quote, take advantage of us. So when we get into that situation, at least with some of my clients, they feel like they have no control over their life, over their work, because people are coming to them, asking them to do things, et cetera, et cetera. Did that help illustrate
the
fact?
But that's one hell of a complex question. So,
right.
So I'll do my best to try and answer it. It's probably answered in two or three sections. Firstly, the sense of life control is where this sense of can-do sits. And somebody who's got a sense of can-do is the sort of person you can go to, and you know, you've got an urgent job, they're already busy, and you turn to them and say, look, Greg, I need this job doing, I need it doing by tomorrow. Can I leave it with you? Now, if you've got a strong sense of life control, your likely response is going to be, leave it with me, I can do it. immediately that sense of life control kicks in and says, you can do this. Now, sometimes you don't actually know whether you can do it, but what people with a strong sense of life control tend to be able to do is to be able to prioritize, plan, and organize. So what you might say, once you've thought about the job a little bit, say, okay, I've got something else to do tomorrow, but it doesn't have to be done tomorrow. I can do it next week. So that will give me the time in which I can do this urgent job. People with a low sense of life control tend not to be able to do that. They tend to simply spin out of control. They, you know, the pressure of being asked to do something creates that, you know, that panic, if you like. Now, so that's one element. So in a sense, we do know that people with high sense of life control can sometimes take on too much. And but if you look at mental toughness generally, one of the things that we know is that mentally tough individuals also tend to have this ability to use all of the four C's to be able to restore kind of that overall control in their lives. And so have this ability to say no when they have to. I'll give you a good little example. This is an interesting example because Professor Clough he's also a sports psychologist, and he was working with a young gymnast in the British Olympic team who had a lot of potential, and they were trying to, you know, get her to really believe in herself and to really aspire to go after a medal. And so he started working with her and he started to develop a mental toughness. One day she came in and she said, thank you for all of this, I'm giving it up. And that created quite a shock all round. And what she was saying and what she said was, I'm not the one who wanted the medal. It's been my parents, my coach, it's everybody else. Actually, I just want to be a normal teenager. I do not want to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go for 2 hours training before school. I just want to be normal. I might have the ability to do it, but I don't want to do it. And you know, first of all, Peter was a bit taken aback because it felt, oh, wow, that sounds like I've got it wrong. But actually, when you think about it, he'd got it absolutely right. He'd enable this person to get back in control of her life. She wasn't in control before. And so sometimes this sense of life control does kick in this way. People will say, hang on, this is not making me happy. This is what I want to do, and this is what I'm going to do.
Perfect. Awesome. That was a great, great example. Before we started recording, you mentioned that there are some new developments in mental toughness and some things that you've been working on. Would you care to share some of those?
Yes. Well, until now, we've had the four C's, and we only had subscales developed and researched for the control and commitment scales. And those are two very important scales. Together, they constitute what most people call self-efficacy. So it's what most developers, most coaches are interested in. But we hadn't actually worked out what made commitment and what made challenge. And so that's involved a lot of research, developing a lot of items for an expanded questionnaire, going out and doing research with people. And only last week, the final set of results came through, and we are now able to, with confidence, say commitment is a function of two separate things. One is this goal orientation, and secondly is achievement orientation. With challenge, that has become very, very clear. That the challenge scale tended to be interesting, but a little bit fuzzy. We now know it's got this risk orientation element, and it's got this learning from all experiences element. And now that we can strip it out, we can begin to identify some interesting things. So for instance, if you look at risk orientation, we're not talking here about people taking needless risk. It's about stretching yourself, taking those small risks that help you to grow and to learn and so on. What we're beginning to discover is that some people actually get a high from it. And so when we talk about downsides, and we look at somebody who's got a very high level of challenge, sometimes those people are getting a bit of a buzz from it, and that buzz is taking over. So if they're not aware of that, God knows where it's going to take them. So sometimes people, right. You know, if you go into businesses, I often use this little illustration, and it always resonates. You know, you work with a group of people in an office or in a factory, and you say, have you got anybody here who goes home every night, comes back in the morning and says, I've thought of a great idea, and does that almost every day of the week? And everybody bursts out laughing and points to somebody. Usually, right. Funny enough, it's usually the boss who's like that. And then you examine the consequences of that. The boss is getting a buzz out of coming up with new ideas and thinks everybody should get excited about it. But actually, you come up with too many ideas and you bring them back into a group or into a workplace, what you often do is produce chaos. And more than that, if there are people in there who just want to get on with the job, they don't necessarily want to invent something new every day, you actually begin to stress them. And so if you're not aware of that, that can create big problems. And again, it's a little bit like the guy with or the person with high levels of interpersonal confidence. You can find yourself suddenly becoming less effective and not understanding why, because you're doing a great job. You're coming up with great ideas, but what you're doing is switching everybody else off.
Wow. So just to understand this a little bit more, because I think we all can relate to individuals that either bosses or something that come into work and say, hey, I got this idea. We're going to do this today. We're going to do that today. They may score high on the challenge part of the mental toughness, the MTQ 48, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's always a good thing if they're not aware of what they're doing.
Well, and I think you're summing up something quite nicely here. What we've learned over the years is if you look at the mentally sensitive, the issue is always about them, about their ability to deal with what's going on around them. The mentally tough never have that problem. They breeze through life. The challenge for them is to understand their impact upon others. And so, you know.
Oh, that's a great point. So it's a different perspective. The mentally sensitive are, and this I might be phrasing this or summarizing this wrong. It's about them, about not being able to take action, where the mentally tough may be, hey, I can do it, but they don't have any sensory acuity of how their mental toughness is affecting the people around them.
Well, that's absolutely right. And then you could have a mentally tough and a mentally sensitive individual, both with the same education, same level of skills, same level of abilities. But the mentally sensitive person will feel every knock on their journey through life and will often take a long time to recover from them. And sometimes they may not recover from them. The mentally tough person just accepts that these knocks are part and parcel of life and breezes through them. They're not necessarily insensitive, but they just know how to deal with them. And so for them, that journey just becomes a little bit easier. They tend to rise through organizations better. And we know that, you know, mentally tough individuals, on average, tend to earn more than mentally sensitive individuals. They tend to have bigger houses, bigger cars. But that's only because they just get on with things a little bit more easily. Life for them isn't as much of a struggle as it is for a mentally sensitive individual. So for the mentally sensitive person, it's a question of what can I do about the way that I'm responding to what's happening around me? Whereas for the mentally tough individual, it's not that at all. You know, they are dealing fine with what's happening around them. It's why isn't everybody going with me all of the time?
Right. So it brings us to the assessment part, because it's great to talk about the challenge, commitment, confidence, control, and people can kind of guess it, but they're guessing it from their own perspective. So where they feel they may land on this challenge, because we're maybe lack of self-awareness or through different filters, they're not really accurate with it, which brings us to the MTQ 48, which is the mental toughness questionnaire 48. And I'd like you to talk about the importance of using this type of an assessment so that people can become aware of where they are on the total score of mental toughness, and then each of the categories. Because many people, well, yeah, I don't need the assessment. I can just go out and I'll just work on my challenge, my commitment, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel that the assessment itself provides a mirror, if you will, for this self-awareness to be realized.
Yeah. Well, the mental toughness questionnaire was developed in 2002. It's called the MTQ-48 because it's got 48 questions. It takes about 10 minutes to complete. And for those who are technically aware, it's reliable and valid. It is a very high quality assessment by psychometric standards. But what it does is allow you to complete a questionnaire and get some feedback about where you stand in terms of those four C's and at the moment about four of the subscales. That is critically important because, as you say, everybody looks at things from their own perspective. We very, very commonly do a lot of work in the world of education with staff, leaders, and also with pupils. And one of the mantras in the world of education is we need to improve the confidence of our pupils. But every time we measure mental toughness with pupils, confidence is never the issue. It's the lower scores are always in control, challenge, and commitment, especially that in challenge. And generally, commitment scores are the highest of the four scores. And yet everybody will say, this is what I ought to be developing. So what the framework does and the measure does is give people a very clear understanding of what makes up mindset or mental toughness. So it's got four elements. It hasn't got one. It isn't just all about confidence. And once you begin to understand that, you begin to understand that these interplay with each other as well. And that every one of us is different. So you can have a group of 20 employees complete a questionnaire that might all end up with the same overall score for mental toughness, which is say 6 on a scale of 1 to 10, but they'd all have different profiles. And it's understanding that difference. It's understanding what each individual's profile looks like and therefore what their needs might be. A lot of training.
I was going to say, and then that would allow, for lack of a better word, customized program or training or a roadmap for each individual to improve that. Those, I'm just going to put them in quotes, weaknesses on their mental their toughness, as opposed to looking at the overall score.
Yeah, and I think that's another important contribution we're making. Because for as long as I've been in the business, people have always spoken about the one-size-fits-all nature of training and development. And a lot of training and development is ineffective because it tries to work with the average person. But there isn't an average person sitting in front of you. There are 20 individuals sitting in front of you. And to make any kind of development activity work, it's like anything. You know, if I'm selling something to a client, I will only sell it if I actually meet the client's needs. It's the same with development. You know, I need to understand better what each individual that I'm working with looks like. And that's, you know, I think what we're beginning to see, not just in our work, but generally, we'd be seeing a better understanding of the importance of individual development. I personally think it's why coaching has grown so much, because that's essentially what coaching does. You know, it only works with the individual, and you know, you're working with that person's needs.
Wow, fantastic. Doug, listen, I appreciate your time. I know that it is valuable, and we're getting towards the end of your day today. Would love to reconnect and talk about some of these even further, but again, I just wanted to thank you for your time today. If people, in addition to going to my site, if people wanted to find more out about mental toughness and the MTQ-48, could you give them some resources, your site perhaps?
Sure. Well, the website is www.aqr.co.uk. But if anybody wants to make an inquiry, come to headoffice@aqr.co.uk. But of course, we're working with you, Greg, so I think it'd be also very useful if people made contact with you and, you know, channeled any inquiries through you as well.
Great, thank you.
Well, Doug, one final thing. Can I just pick up on one thing?
Please.
One thing is that there is a book which has been written by Peter Clough and myself called Developing Mental Toughness, published by Kogan Page. That's also a really good source. I mean, it's getting some really good reviews, so we're very proud of it. And we've just learned it's now been translated into 6 languages, so it's kind of spreading around the world. That includes Chinese.
Wonderful.
And Arabic.
And I can attest to the quality of that. I picked up the book and read through it and continue just to leave it on my coffee table, pick it up and turn a page and read through it. And it's like somebody came in the middle of the night and rewrote it. I find new things into it all the time. So that is an excellent, excellent book. I got it on Amazon. So for those listening, they can pick it up on Amazon as well. Doug, again, thank you so much for your time today. Looking forward to scheduling another talk. I could just talk about this all day long because it affects so much of what we do in life. It affects how we behave, how we think, how we perceive, our emotions, all of it. So I appreciate you taking the time today and helping walk the new listeners and the old listeners through this concept of mental toughness.
Thank you very much, Greg. I've really enjoyed it. And you're right. I could talk all day about this, as you probably sense.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you liked what you've heard, please tell your friends and subscribe by your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. Also, make sure you check out www.warriormindtraining.com. Until next time, live with courage. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.